Welcome you to today's Dallas City Council meeting. We have a very special guest. It is Father Rex Hayes with the Holy Trinity Catholic Church. He will do the invocation. Please rise. Father Rex, thank you for being with us.
Loving God, throughout the ages, you have made yourself known through various and mysterious ways. You have gifted us with this beautiful city. It is the realization of the dreams and efforts of many men and women throughout the years. Our great city, Dallas, is a city of excellence in the arts and education and healthcare and in security. It is a great city of culture, commerce, and entertainment. It is a great city of cultural, ethnic, and religious diversity. We thank you, God, for that. Today, as we start a new year, a new decade, full of hope and dreams, we ask you to bless our mayor, Tom Leppert, and our various council women and men. As they lead our city into this new decade, give them wisdom to care for the great inheritance that we have received from generations which have gone before us. Give them understanding and insight into the problems at hand. Give them vision and integrity as they lead us into the future. We pray that you will bless our leaders with hearts and minds that are truly sensitive to and mindful of the needs of those who are poor and marginated, those who are at risk. We pray that you will bless our leaders with imagination and encouragement, that the greatest strivings of our people and the cultural life of our city might thrive. We pray that these leaders truly be servants of all the people of this great city, and that their efforts will promote the fulfillment of the potential of all. We pray that they lead our city so that it might be truly a beacon on a hill, a beacon of justice and peace, a beacon of security and health care, a beacon of education and the arts, a beacon of commerce and entertainment, a beacon of community and diversity. Oh God, please hear our prayer. Amen.
Amen. Ms. Carroway, would you like to give the pledge?
Our pledge is to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Father Rex, thank you very much. I can't think of a better way to start the new year. Appreciate it. Councilmember Hill, could I turn it over to you for a special presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mayor and Council, when I first began the trail towards office, I started out in Pleasant Grove because I knew that the people of Pleasant Grove did not know me. I live in South Oak Cliff. I represent South Oak Cliff and Southeast Pleasant Grove. It is a very odd-shaped district. The people of Oak Cliff knew me, but the people of Pleasant Grove did not, and so I started there. And I started in a way that they would not know me, so that I got to see them without them knowing that I was looking at them. Pleasant Grove has turned out to be a wonderful experience, filled with good, hardworking people. One of the people who has done some of the hardest work to assist me in raising awareness in Pleasant Grove is Keith McKeague. Keith, I would like you to come forward, and I would like those who have come with Keith to come forward as well. The very first thing that we did on a large scale to bring some positive light to Pleasant Grove was GrowFest. You've heard me say before, Mayor was there, It started out as a gem of an idea. I said to Councilwoman Mitrano several years ago, I said, I want to do something special in Pleasant Grove. And Councilwoman Mitrano said, why don't you do a festival? Thus began Grove Fest. But ideas have to take feet. Keith McKeague and the folk you see standing here and Dr. Shirley King put feet to Pleasant Grove. Keith designed all of the artwork. Keith got everybody together. Keith withstood my fussing at him and running him ragged, but he did that. The first Pleasant Grove Grove Fest brought in nearly 2,000 people, the very first one. We did it again this past year. The mayor was there, Mr. Atkin was there, Senator West was there, Ms. Mitrano was, of course, there. Grove Fest this year brought in closer to 3,000 people. And the mayor said when he left, this has really brought this community together. And it did, Mayor. We had a month-long celebration in the month of October in Pleasant Grove. We had Hands Across the Grove, the National Night Out, the golf tournament, and Grove Fest. Hands Across the Grove was where we joined hands, and we released helium balloons. One of those balloons landed in a small city in Louisiana. A family who was in need received that balloon and joined us, and we were able to help that family because of Hands Across the Grove. We then had National Night Out. We then had the golf tournament at the Golf Club of Dallas. And finally, we had Grove Fest 2009. Those are the balloons that you see up there. And we released them, and they went everywhere. Behind all of that, I simply got to be the face. But behind me was the team, this team, and led and doing most of the work that nobody saw and for which he did not get public acclaim was Keith McKeague. All of us standing here had some sort of public face. In fact, one of us got a chance to be on the television not so long ago. The one who's looking around. But Keith never got a public face, but did all of the work, designed all of the artwork that you see, was there at the Golf Classic. And so, Keith, I wanted you today to know how much we appreciate you and to give you a public face for what you have done in Pleasant Grove. Special recognition. Whereas Keith McKeague was born on August the 4th, 1961, in Miami, Florida, and moved to Dallas on January 1st, 1984. And whereas, in 1992, the year I returned from living in Great Britain, Keith McKeague participated in a month-long mission trip to Nairobi, Kenya, and helped to build churches and schools. And whereas Keith started out-of-the-box marketing and design, and whereas Keith McKeague was instrumental in producing solutions through acceptance, not denial, Stand Up Pleasant Grove, and whereas this campaign consisted of Hands Across the Grove, National Night Out in the Grove, the 20th Annual Southeast Dallas Community Golf Classic, and Grove Fest 09. And whereas Grove Fest 09 culminated the month-long celebration and provided opportunities for children and others to be involved in healthy, constructive, and life-building programs and activities. And whereas Keith McKeague has served with others as a community change agent, now therefore I, Vonsil Jones Hill, on behalf of Mayor Tom Leppard and the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby on this sixth day of January 2010 extend special recognition to Keith McKeague for being an outstanding citizen of this community of Pleasant Grove and the city of Dallas. Keith, we are in the Grove, and it is pleasant. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And I'd like to thank all my family up here. My not being in the limelight is not by accident. I'm not much for being in the front of the camera as much as I am behind the camera. But I want to thank Councilwoman Hill. She was a lot more than a face. She has been an inspiration. She's given us the wind to spread our wings and to fly, and we've done some pretty incredible things I think that everybody here is very, very proud of. Mayor Leppard, you're outstanding. I know that you catch a lot of grief for a lot of things, and maybe you don't hear enough how incredible you are, but in my book, you're as good as it gets, and we appreciate you. You've been there for us, you know, Little Pleasant Grove in Southeast Dallas. When we were helping the Fosters from Louisiana, you were right there and, you know, shaking their hands, making them feel welcome to the city of Dallas, and went out of your way, and we appreciate that very much. And Mr. Tanel Atkins and Councilman Carraway, we appreciate you very much. I am just a blip on the screen compared to what these folks here have been doing for quite a long time. I don't think there are any accidents in life. I think accidents are things that happen. They're challenges that happen on the road that God puts us all on. And there has absolutely been some divine intervention in Pleasant Grove. I say it's divine because so many things had to happen at exactly the same time for this to have been accomplished. We had to have a new Audubon Center built, and Chris Kulak, director there. We had to have a new college built, Eastville College. We had to have a Chamber of Commerce that was rebranding themselves and trying to make a better area, as well as a Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. We had to have a department store named Levine's that were fully invested in the community. There were so many factors. Chris Johnson and Esther from Watching a Dream had to be in place at just the right place and just the right time. And I guess I was just one of the pieces of that puzzle, a recovering entrepreneur who had spent the first part of my life building businesses and thinking I wanted to be a millionaire, and then deciding at age 45 that I needed to find a new direction. So I was just one part of a very beautiful canvas. And I would really like to invite the city, if you haven't already realized, that you have an incredible asset in Pleasant Grove, not just for redeveloping Southeast Dallas, but because this community is a model for what can be done. We did all of this without a single dime from the city of Dallas. We had, in the country where we had the worst economy the country's ever seen, Pleasant Grove, Southeast Dallas, had their best year in 50 years. That doesn't happen by accident. It took a lot of hard work from these incredible people. I'd really like to give them all a hand. Thank them very much. Esther Walker, Darrell, Joy, I'm going to forget everybody's names. Everybody was just incredible. And I want to close by reminding you that in February, we will be asking you for some money. It's not a lot. It's just a little bit, but this is part of the mayor's task force. And we had to have a mayor's task force in place as well. And I think that was a huge motivating factor to start pulling things together. We, out of all the task force, came up with probably the cheapest alternative for how to redevelop our area. It's less than $100,000. And that is to rebrand Pleasant Grove and give it a new identity. I know we're short in time, but I will tell you that this past month, we were challenged like never before when T-shirts were being sold at Town East Mall that had pictures of people being thrown in the back of trunks and says, "Welcome to Pleasant Grove." We had to, what we thought was going to be, okay, I got to stop talking, but we'll see you in February. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you also very much for coming. Keith, thank you so much for what you do. William Collins is with the big electronics, Continental Electronics. We had intended to recognize him before. We missed that, but William, we're thankful and grateful for what you do, and we anticipate that Continental Electronics may be traveling with us Mr. Atkins, on the next Africa trade mission. Thank you all so very much. Right. Thank you all so much.
But before you run off, and I know we want to get some pictures, I know there's a couple of council members that would like to make some comments too. Mr. Kelly?
Thank you. And let me say that my New Year's resolution is to be shorter in my speeches. That will start after January 7th, the day of the 6th. Let me first say to each and every one of you, but let me say to my colleague Bunfield Jones Hill. It starts with a vision, and folks are behind the scenes, but when you have to have the support, and you get that support in through the leadership and through Trash Attack and through Grove Fest, it was created. And not only was it created, it was supported. I just want to commend Councilwoman Bunfield Jones Hill for her visionary and steadfast commitment to the Grove Fest. That is why Pleasant Grove, with the support of each and every one of you, from the Southeast Chamber to the pawn shops to all of you that are involved in that area, to our community prosecutors, they say it takes a village. Well, certainly a collective workmanship of you all working together under the leadership of our council colleagues has produced this fantastic event, and it has truly transformed a community, and it is a true example of what other communities can do. So let's take this pilot program and this success story that we have. Let's translate it and transform it even into other communities, because Pleasant Grove, you all are on the lead, and through the leadership of Councilwoman Bunfield Jones Hill. So spread the germ and let it go all over the city of Dallas.
We will.
And the other neighborhoods. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, thank you, Bunfield, for inviting me to Grove Fest. I mean, it was a blast. Mayor Lefty, also thank you for the Mayor Task Force to brand Pleasant Grove. And as you know, there are four council members is in that district. You know, Mayor Pro Tem Dwayne Carraway, Carolyn Davis, myself, and Bronfield. So Pleasant Grove is a huge area, and it's a great pleasure for everybody to look at Pleasant Grove and see the beauty of Pleasant Grove, and see the people from all over who come and make the city a better place to live. Again, thank you, Bronfield, and thank you for Grove Fest.
Thank you.
Terrific.
Thank you.
And both to Ms. Hill and Keith and everybody that's up here, I wish I could add a lot between the comments that were made by Ms. Hill and by Keith. There's not a lot to say other than I think there's some terrific things happening in Pleasant Grove. I agree with Mr. Carraway. I think this can be a model that can be used in other communities. There are some terrific things happening. As you mentioned, Keith, it wasn't an easy year last year from an economic standpoint. But there's some terrific things happening in Pleasant Grove, and I think everybody in this community, and not only in the city of Dallas, but throughout the region, ought to be real excited about what's happening there. It also proves that things don't happen unless you got leadership. Leadership actually makes a difference. And to all of you who provided that leadership, a big thanks, because you are setting the stage for what will be a terrific community, not only today, but long into the future. So you've got a real investment in it, and we appreciate that investment and sacrifice that all of you made. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to take pictures. Any of you who would like to join us in the pictures are more than welcome. I would especially invite the Pleasant Grove representatives to join us.
Good morning. Is Jim Reed here today?
Yeah.
Would you come up, Jim? We're going to kind of talk about the momentum of Texas Inc., Jim Reed organization, a nonprofit, and I think most people know Jim Reed. He's been around a long time. And Jim, you know, he decided to go into the project to bring small business together. And he said, how can he give back to the community? One thing Jim decided to do is said, let's do a contest. And what he did was went out and how many people did you have, Jim?
Well, we had eight competitors in terms of a business plan competition. This is the first one. We intend to do this on an annual basis, but the Kauffman Foundation is kind of a national research organization on entrepreneurship. So the business plan competition was the most cost-effective way to promote entrepreneurship and small business.
Right. And by doing that, and what he did was a contest, and what he did was he had Bumblebee Energy Solutions. Are they here? Will you please come up? We also had Kevin Nunley from State Farm Agent and Dallas South News. Is they here? Come up, please. These are some of the competitors in the contest. And they are the winners, right?
Yeah, the winners.
Did they receive anything, Jim?
$1,000 in cash as a starter.
Well, you know, they did have a cash award, but also with pro bono service, you know, trying to teach an entrepreneurship, how you make small business go and grow into large business. And that was the urgent of Jim's mission. Jim's mission was always been one thing, small business. Small business is opportunity to grow large business. And without small business, we would not have anything growing today. And one thing you know that in the United States, most of the business model made up of small businesses. And that's why we do tip our hat off to Jim and his momentum Texas to make sure that we do have the small business and the state to grow. I have here a special recognition. Momentum Texas, Dallas-based statewide nonprofit organization focused on building community, growing entrepreneurship, and competition for the best South Dallas business plan. Momentum Texas gave the four firms a cash award and pro bono service and helped them grow their business. Whereas four firms were recognized at the award luncheon on October 29, 2009, and the 10 were recognized at the event by Tim O'Brien and Citibank, who served as one of the six competition judges in Bumblebee Energy Solutions is a limited liability company formed in July 2009 by Malcolm Jackson and Carol DaCosta, and we're focused on performance, energy, audit, and range in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and Austin area. And Bumblebee Energy Solutions, energy audit, industrial, growing industry because of the savings they can achieve in energy over the long term. Whereas Bumblebee Energy Solutions plans to create one job overtime plan to train and hire several rated field inspectors in the southern Dallas. Now, therefore, I, Tanel Act, on behalf of Dallas City Council and Maritime Town Level of the City of Dallas, do hereby extend a special recognition to Bumblebee Energy Solutions on this 6th day of January 2010 for being the Southern Dallas Business Plan Competition founder.
Which one?
You want to
say
something?
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to thank everyone for this recognition today for the city, because I know that the city's wrapping up its RFP for the weatherization project. So we're looking forward to helping out as much as we can, you know, with the city of Dallas and other cities within the Metroplex. So thank you for the recognition.
And I'm not going to read all the whereas, but the next one is, I'm going to read part of whereas. Kevin Newland State Farm Agent will open soon in 2421 West Keys Boulevard on the intersection of Keys and West Hampton and Southern Dallas. That's Dave Newman District, right?
Yeah.
Okay. State Farms are hiring 2 full-time and 1 part-time member of lunch and a growing community business. Now, therefore, I Chanel Act, on behalf of Dallas City Council and Mayor Tone Level, City of Dallas, do hereby extend a special recognition to Kevin Newland. Nutley, State Farm Agent.
Thank you all. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Jim.
competitors. We are open. We've been open. This is our third month. We're at the intersection of Keith and Hampton, 2421 West Keith Boulevard. We have three full-time employees right out of the community and two part-time employees. This is our way of giving back to the community. We need customers, so please come by and see us. Our phone number is 214-333-0404 for all of your insurance and financial services needs. Thank you.
Okay, Dave, this is the one you took from. Next one is, again, I'm not going to read all the whereas. Dallas South News, a newly established nonprofit corporation, mainly by Sean Williams, that has focused primarily on stories within the city limit and the southern of Dallas. And whereas Dallas South News mission as a nonprofit news organization is utilized technology, journalism, principles, and social media to empower and inform underserved community. Now, therefore, I, Chanel, act on behalf of the Dallas City Council and Maritone Level in the City of Dallas, do hereby express recognition to Dallas South News on this 6th day of January 2010 for being a Southern Dallas Business Plan Competition finalist and a winner.
Thank you, Councilman. Thank you, Momentum Texas. After some of the stories that we've done at DallasSouthNews.org, I wasn't sure if we'd be invited to be recognized, but I thank you for that. We believe that nonprofit news is a wave of the future, and we are the only one in the country that is focused specifically on underserved communities, especially with the number of minorities in the southern sector or in southern Dallas. So I want to thank the City Council for this recognition and being on the forefront of recognizing the new wave of the future for technology and media. Thank you.
And also, I'd like to thank Tom Leffler, you know, Mayor Leffler, a whole lot of people do not realize without the Mayor Task Force that this organization would have not been done, and Jim Reed would not have been able to receive a grant, a $75,000 grant to help to fund some of this project. Mayor Leffler, I invite you up to take a pitch and say a word about the small business.
No, I'd just like to add and follow and echo your words. A big thank you. Again, we've got some good things happening in a lot of parts of the community where that hasn't been the case in the past. And it's because, again, a lot of small businesses have stepped in and not only made an investment from a business standpoint, but also made it known that they're going to participate in the community. And the combination of those two things, I think, what's great and what's happening.
Thank you. Dave, you want to come and take a picture since you guys throw one up here?
I just want to mention this is kind of the tip of the iceberg with respect to growing small business in Southern Dallas. Our strategy, I'm working with a small business team, is to create a process where we help over 2,000 businesses over the next 5 years and create 3,000 jobs in Southern Dallas. This is a grow-your-own economic development strategy. It's called economic gardening, and we're going to be pushing for that because small businesses under 20 employees have 30% of the jobs of the city of Dallas. And so we're going to go after that in terms of more economic growth.
Again, thank you, Jim.
Mr. Simmons, could you join me for just a second? Over the holidays, unfortunately, we lost a leader in a particular community that's important to us, but more important, a leader throughout all of the city of Dallas. And Dave, I was wondering if you could say a couple of words and maybe lead us in a moment of silence.
Thank you, Mayor. We're speaking of Miss Maddie Nash. Miss Nash passed away on December 20th, 2009. She was a longtime resident of West Dallas and currently within District 3. We know of Miss Nash because of her heart, her soul, her energy, her passion. She also was the first city council person representing that area of Dallas back when we created 14-1, single-member districts, 1991 to 1993. And she's known lovingly as the mayor of West Dallas. I was not able to attend her funeral, but I attended the wake and made a few comments at the wake. The church across the street from her home was packed, and it was a moving series of speakers, of citizens coming forward. And I mentioned to the mayor this morning that I thought it would be good for us as council members, as the city council, and us as the city to remember Ms. Nash for her heart and her compassion. I told a story that night at the wake that early on after getting elected, I called her, and she and I very quietly, I wouldn't tell anyone about it. I told the story at the wake, and I hadn't told people about it. She and I would meet once a quarter, once every 3 months or so at her home. And it was a ritual of what food to bring Ms. Nash. And the first time I had lunch with her, I said, "Ms. Nash, what would you like?" She said, "Just get something. Just get something." It was barbecue, finally. Finally figured out what she enjoyed. But it was the quiet time in her home, listening to her about what was important in her neighborhood. And that helped guide me at the early stages of my service to the city. So I would ask the council today and those guests that are with us to give Ms. Nash a moment of silence.
Let's all rise.
Thank you.
Mr. Newman, thank you very much for that. I had a chance, I know Mr. Carraway was at the funeral too, and were able to say a couple of comments, and I spent some time in her living room and in her dining room too. She was a terrific lady that contributed an awful lot, again, not only from a city and kind of from a West Dallas standpoint, but the people around her. And it's a real loss, and appreciate you taking the time to relate that. Thank you very much. One thing before we get started, I know that there are a number of weather reports out there that indicate that we're going to have some real challenging weather over the next couple of days. And I thought, Mr. Evans, Ryan, that you could kind of give us a little bit of an update on some of the anticipation as well as the preparations and things that we should be looking for in the next couple of days.
Sure, Mayor. For those of you who have not been watching the weather, the National Weather Service has given us some pretty alarming facts. They basically said tomorrow through Sunday morning, it will probably be as cold here as it has been since 1996, and could be as cold as it was in 1989, where it got down to single digits. Now, saying that, with the wind chill, we're expecting winds that could be as high as 30 miles an hour tomorrow morning, so our wind chills could be under zero. So if you think it's cold now, tomorrow through Sunday is going to be very, very cold. Now, for those of us who have homes, we'll probably be okay. We're, of course, worried about the homeless population. We have all the shelters are warning their clients about what's coming. They're providing them with additional bedding and coats. We're also, the police department has been instructed to pick up any homeless that they see on the streets in all areas of town, and to take them to shelter. Union Gospel is prepared to accept overflows, and we think we're going to be okay as it relates to the homeless population. If I'm asking you all, if you see homeless folks on the street, and I'm talking about the council as well as the folks listening, to please contact the police department so that they can pick these folks up, because this is life-threatening weather conditions, and they need to be taken to shelter. In addition to that, the Weather Service is giving us about a 30-40% chance of precipitation tonight. Now, it's primarily supposed to be east of the I-35 corridor, but guess where we are? We're about half of it. They're going to be east of the I-35 corridor. Now, that could come in the form of rain, freezing rain, snow, or sleet. And again, it's only about a 30 or 40% chance. We're, of course, hoping that the wind that comes with the precipitation will dry this off, so that we do not have freezing roads tomorrow. However, in the event that we do have our what we call Ice Force One, which is basically our street scouts out surveying the streets, the bridges, and the overpasses throughout the night, and they are prepared to put down sand if we need to tomorrow through Sunday. TxDOT is also on alert. Their primary concern is also the overpasses, especially the I-5 in North Dallas. In addition to that, the water department has already had some water breaks through this cold weather. We'll be out on patrol. We'll also be looking for folks that have their sprinkler systems on, warning them, citing them if necessary, and providing sand on these spots throughout the city. All of the departments have been told to shut off all of their sprinkler systems until the weather warms up as well. We are also going to provide what we're calling a backup heating shelter in the event that we lose power through the city and our own folks lose power and need a place to go. And we'll tell you all what that shelter is a little later in the day. We have done a press release that's gone out to tell folks what they need to do about their pipes and their animals. I would tell anybody that's listening that if you're out on the street, make sure that you have either blankets with you or your winter coat and walking shoes in the event that your car breaks down for whatever reason. You don't want folks out there that think they can get from their garage to wherever they're going and back without ever having to worry about warm clothes, because there's always that possibility that you will be stranded. We'll be doing a press release later today to tell the folks everything I just told you. You might want, on a personal basis for anybody listening, you might want to go ahead and take that blanket out of your back closet and wrap it around your pipes outside where you have a faucet. Bring your pets inside. Make sure that your pet's water is not frozen. You might want to leave your downstairs faucets dripping so that your pipes don't freeze. I personally think that we're probably over-prepared for this, but that's a good thing. And this should all be over by Sunday afternoon.
Terrific. Great summary. Ms. Davis, please.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. There's a couple of things. I'm asking that we have animal control to ride the area and look for loose dogs that are walking and see if we can get them into some type of shelter. The other thing, have we gotten with the TXU and some of the other companies? There's a lot of seniors who, just in my area, I was walking a couple weeks ago, who did not have power for whatever reason. So please ask them not to turn off, and the gas company.
In fact, that's already, go ahead.
Ms. Davis, yes, we've been in contact with the power companies, and they will not be suspending anyone's gas or power until it warms up.
Yeah, that's already been done. I'm glad you raised that. Appreciate it. Thanks, Ryan. Madam Secretary, our morning speakers, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We begin your morning speakers with Carolyn Tomey, followed by Michael Machiak. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll see timers on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. Again, your first speaker is Carolyn Tomey. Please state your name and address for the record. You may step up to the podium and the microphone. Thank you.
My name is Carolyn Tomey, and I am 9845 Walnut Hill Lane in Dallas, Texas.
You may go ahead.
Thank you. I'm glad we brought up the subject of small business. I'm the owner of a small business at Walnut Hill Lane in Osceola. I want to address the signage regulations. Being a small business, we have very little way to put our message out to the public. Our businesses at our little intersection were not aware of the new regulations that had been passed a couple years ago until our code compliance inspectors kind of swooped down upon us and said, no, you've got to take everything out of your windows. You have to take your signs down. You are only allowed very little of signage to let the people know what we do. I don't know how many of you have ever been a small business owner, but we struggle every day. We pay very high taxes for our business. We pay sales tax. We support our government in every way. We really feel like our government should not be able to tell us exactly how to project our businesses out to the public. We do know that businesses need to be neat, they need to be uncluttered, but we also need to get the message out to the public about what we do. My business is very unique. It is one of the few businesses of its kind in the city. In the past year, 5 businesses of my business have gone out. Their people are trying to find me. My plea to the council today is to let me keep my signage on the top of my business. I cooperated in every way with the compliance inspectors. I've taken all my posters out. I've even had to take my Lake Highlands Wildcat stickers off. I've even had to take all my little insignias off the door. But on the top of my building, I have a painting of the vacuum cleaners that I service. The people from all over the city that have gone to these closures are coming to me now to take care of their problems. And I've been told that I must take the signage down. It's been on my business since 1981 when we opened our very business. And I beg and implore the council to please let me keep my signage up there. And to please kind of tweak your regulations and rules so our little businesses can say, we have a special, and let us tell the people what we can do. Thank you, Council.
Carolyn, thank you for coming down, and thank you for your passion and speaking for the small business owners. I believe in just a little while our mayor might even address some of your concerns. Thank you for coming down.
Okay, would I be one? Do I need to stay?
Couple of comments. And first of all, we haven't had a chance to talk, but I appreciate you being down here. Please know everybody on the council understands the importance of the small business in the city of Dallas, and we want to see you succeed anyway. We're trying to balance some issues here on public policy, some issues that the signage has gotten, a lot of issues that have been raised in the city. At the same time, we want to make sure that you are able to do the sort of things that you're talking about. What I'm going to ask is if Mr. Evans, Mr. Perkins from the city attorney, and then also Forrest can get together in the course of the next week. Because, again, I've gotten this. I haven't talked to Carolyn, but I've gotten some of the similar comments from other largely small businesses, but not always small businesses, that have raised some of the same issues. And I think what I'd like to ask the three of those gentlemen to do is look at three different pieces of this. One is what the existing issues are that we need to address. Two is how they fall in with the existing statutes we've got. And then the third piece, to the extent that there's something we can do with those statutes, that's fine. But if it's outside the statutes, are there some initial fixes that we can make that would be in the short term that allow, that release the burden from some of the small business issues that I know you and I have talked about, Ryan, and Tom and I have had some conversations on it too. With a short enough time frame, I'm going to ask next week, although it's an agenda session, that you would come back and report either an executive session or in the full session on kind of those three pieces, what we can do, because we want to make sure that the signage ordinances hits that balance that I talked about. And I understand it's not necessarily an easy one. There's a lot of individual circumstances in a city of as large as the city of Dallas is. We've got some real challenges on that. At the same time, we want to be very responsive. So what I'm going to ask is these three gentlemen to go back with some of the comments that you've made. I'll ask them if you'll stay for just a moment. Perhaps Forrest, if you're around, you can get kind of a special perspective on exactly what her issues are so you can kind of build that in the equation. I know that, Jerry, you've got a couple of others that have also approached me as well as you in your area, and there may be some others. So if there's special circumstances, special instances, we want to get those in front. But if the three of you will come back and kind of report kind of what we can do kind of short term as well as what might have to be changes in the statutes that be a little bit more responsive. But please know, we want to make sure that we're creating this balance and we're doing it the right way and that we're doing things again. We may not be able to hit everything, I understand that, but that we're being responsive to the small business because we don't want to be in the position of limiting your success. We want you to be very successful. At the same time, please understand there's other issues that come into this, and that's the balance that we've got to hit.
Do I need to remain to talk to somebody?
Wait for just a couple of minutes. We won't keep you, but for a couple of moments.
That's all right.
Forrest, if you could kind of wave your hand for just a second. Forrest will get with you, and it won't take but a couple of minutes, but I do want him to be familiar with your particular situation.
Okay.
Ms. Davis, did you want to make a comment?
Yes, Mayor. Thank you so much. I just want to make sure when we start looking at the signage, and especially in the South Dallas area, and some par, especially in those areas, Mr. Carraway's area, my area, some of those stores just have too much signage.
That's absolutely right.
On the windows. I guess because it's been going on for so long, it's gotten totally out of hand. So as we look at this, I think we need to have something in place where all signs are uniform across the city. Things are placed on windows neat. You don't have to have 17 signs on a window because you can't see inside the store. I also think that we shouldn't have goblins and ghosts and all that stuff on top of a roof to do advertisement. I think we just need to look at a better way on how we need to market our businesses. So I'm just hoping as we look at this, we look at things that's going to be wholesome for the business and things that's going to look appealing to the eye of a business.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And you've articulated kind of that other piece of it where we were trying to address it and make sure that, to be truthful with you, a lot of those instances raise public safety questions. And that's what we were trying to address. And that's the balance that we want to make sure we get. Mr. Carraway, then Mr. Salazar.
Let me, and Ms. Tommy, thank you for coming. And Mayor, I'm going to agree with the fact that we can begin to research it, but I'm also going to suggest, even to Ms. Tommy, one, let me make you comfortable. We're not trying to put you out of business. And you are one of the businesses that we love to have, but then there are some that will take advantage of the very thing that you're fighting for. There are those that are taking advantage in the opposite direction. So we just had a gentleman, an Asian guy, at the donut shop that was killed, unfortunately. And had his signs and windows may have been clear, maybe we could have had an opportunity to see more into the bandits that went into his business. Let me speak, and we're going to get you now. I want you to be able to take under consideration that we're going to, as the mayor has said, we're going to look at some special provisions to try to see how we can. But then it's very important that folks understand the problem, the overall problem that we're having across the entire city. I'd invite you, and far as I want you all, when we are talking with Ms. Thomas, to maybe to take a trip as well. So we're adhering to you. But take a trip on the other side of town so you can see the opposition and the things that we're up against so that you can, since we're going to be working along with you, try to give us some suggestions of how we can maybe solve the overall problem. We're hearing yours. And one thing that I did hear that I know I got to deal with is that Lake Highland sign over here with Jerry Allen. So that Wildcat sign, we got to deal with that.
I don't think that's a major problem.
Well, it's major as far as we're concerned here with the Wildcat. But I would like for you to be even proactive as you are being today on behalf of small businesses and not just yours, but to take a look over the entire city with us and then join us with some thoughts that you may add in. While we are trying to solve yours, you can also help us have some suggestions maybe that can help us look at some of the others.
I would like very much to do that.
I want to let you know I'm a team player with it, but we're not going to stop taking those old raggedy signs down in the areas that are over-proliferating.
Certainly a good idea, but, you know, if we could just have a few little revisions.
Absolutely.
That's what we're looking at. That's about.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. It's been a year that actually the ordinance that we have in effect came into play at actually the Asian Trade District, and what they did through the Asian Chambers organized all of the businesses that were affected and have a series of meetings to educate them along with our staff on what the rules are and give them also times to comply. I think in this instance we have one business. I think really the approach should be to look at the area and really envelope the area with inspectors to talk to the different property owners and businesses to educate them. And if there is a chamber in that area or another group that can meet with them to kind of pull them together, because I think the one is the timing. You know, in this situation, not this past, but the year before, it was around Christmas time, and that's the biggest holiday season. And staff was very well and professional to go in and allow them the time to resolve the issues on the signage. And there was a particular case where we would need to look at, you know, that would give the opportunity to do that and bring it back to the council.
Good comment. And I don't know they'll incorporate that. So appreciate it. Thank you very much. Madam Secretary?
The next speaker is Michael Maciek, followed by Rick Gonzalez.
Howdy. Michael Andrew Mahichek, ma'am.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll be back next month because I tried to get in touch with James and Benny and do a PowerPoint, but I wasn't able to get that done. So my speaking to you has been modified. I was going to do a PowerPoint concerning public safety. I have been blessed with many wonderful mentors here in this big city. Reverend Bill McElvaney. Have any of y'all ever met Bill? He's a theologian out there at the Perkins School of Theology at the Southern Methodist. I've stood here after him, and I've stood here before him during Top 5. He told me, get back to work, boy. Reverend Peter Johnson. Do any of y'all know Peter Johnson? Dr. King sent Peter Johnson to Dallas to do the work of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. in 1967 as a 21-year-old. Reverend Johnson was sent here. And he said, time to get back to work, boy. Dr. Elba Garcia. Any of y'all here know Dr. Garcia? She said, little child, it's time to get back to work. Public safety has deteriorated since my post has been now in a new situation. So, all right, the fourth one is somebody most of y'all might not know, Annie Benjamin. She's a little singer-songwriter, and me and her, we played with each other on top of Flagpole Hill on March 15th, 2003. And I called her December the 29th and said, baby, are you playing anywhere for New Year's Eve? I didn't want to say, can me and you sit and talk, because I didn't want to interfere with her holidays, but I wanted to go hear her play. She said, where are you playing, man? I said, no, baby, you're the one. No, you, no, you. So today was supposed to be public safety. Who is the public safety officer is a question I would like answered, as this woman had answered after her 3 minutes was up. But I'll share my final mentor was Jimi Hendrix. This is titled Up From the Skies. I just want to talk to you. I won't do you no harm. I just want to know about your people lives on this here people farm. I heard some of you got your families living in cages, tall and cold. And some just stay there and dust away past the age of old. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. I just want to know about the rooms behind your minds. Do I see a vacuum there, or am I going blind? Or is it just remains from vibrations and echoes of long ago? Things like love the world and let your fancy flow. Is this true? Please let me talk to you. Let me talk to you. I have lived here before, the days of ice, and of course this is why I'm so concerned. And I come back to find the stars misplaced, and the smell of a world that's burned. Yeah, well, maybe it's just a change of climate. I can dig it. I can't dig it, baby. I just want to see. Wow, if my daddy could see me now. Could we hear about the public safety officer presiding in the city of Dallas at this time?
We appreciate you being with us. Thank you very
Who
much.
Who is the public safety officer on
actually,
the council?
Actually, what I would do is point you to Ryan Evans. Ryan is the assistant city manager who's responsible for both our police and our fire operations.
Okay, I'm more interested in public safety as in
Secretary
Dr. Garcia.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Rick Gonzalez, followed by Stephen McKinote. Rick Gonzalez is not present. Your final speaker this morning is Stephen McKinote. Stephen McKinote is not present. That concludes your speakers this morning. We now move to your first item on the voting agenda, approval of minutes of the December 2nd, 2009
so
City Council meeting.
All yes. those, motion please. So moved. Mr. Atkins, Ms. Davis seconded it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered.
Our
second is the appointments to boards and commissions.
Yes, you have several nominations to consider this morning. For individual appointment, you have nominated to the Cultural Affairs Commission is Talem Song, nominated by Councilmember Salazar to fill the Cultural Institution Management. To the Community Development Commission, you have nominated Omar Narvaez by Councilmember Hasso and Donna Wigley by Councilmember Cadane. To the City Plan and Zoning Commission, nominated Bruce Birnbaum by Councilmember Coop. To the Dallas Citizens Police Review Board is Robert Young, nominated by Councilmember Nertinsky. To the Landmark Commission, you have Christopher Gonzalez, nominated by Councilmember Hasso for the Engineering Construction category. Mike Mansfield is nominated by Councilmember Nertinsky for the Real Estate category. To the Park and Recreation Board, you have Gabriel Soto, nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board, you have Robert L. Perry II, nominated by Mayor Leppert for the Business Development. For council, for the full council appointment, you have to the Reinvestment Zone 3 Board, Oak Cliff Gateway, is Ben Brown to fill the registered voter, nominated by Councilmember Atkins. Nominated to the Arrangement Zone 5 Board City Center is Kirby White, again registered voter, nominated by Councilmember Hunt. Robert L. Good for the owner property and district is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. Also nominated by Councilmember Hunt for is a registered voter is Shelley Seals. To the Reinvestment Zone 6 Board Farmers Market is Laura Zane Afton for the registered voter, nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the Reinvestment Zone 9 Board Vickery Meadow is Beverly Tobian, was co-nominated by Councilmember Coop and Councilmember Margolin as a registered voter. Raj Narayanan is a registered voter, nominated by Councilmember Margolin. To the Reinvestment Zone 11 Board Downtown Connection is Robert L. Good, owner property in the district by Councilmember Hunt. Shelley Seals, also nominated by Councilmember Hunt, is an employee of person who owns property in the district. To the Reinvestment Zone 12 Board Deep Ellum is Laura Zane Afton, nominated by Councilmember Hunt as a registered voter. To the Reinvestment Zone 13 Board Grand Park South, nominated is Robert W. Ivey as a registered voter by Councilmember Davis. Jim Slaughter is a Dallas member, is nominated by Councilmember Davis. To the Reinvestment Zone 14 Board Skillman Corridor, Rob P. Stewart is a registered voter, is nominated by Councilmember Allen. That completes your nominations this morning.
Are there any of the nominees here with us? If you are, please stand. Members, a motion. Ms. Hunt moved to approve. Do I have a second?
Second,
Ms. Hasso. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay. Board 20.
Thank you. Your item for individual consideration is authorize 1, submission of the list of candidate projects to the Texas Department of Transportation for the Texas Transportation Enhancement Program call for projects. And number 2, acceptance and implementation of the project selected for the Transportation Enhancement Program.
And I would make just a comment on this one. This is more a formality than anything. This went through the Transportation Committee. It just deals with the trails. We have been asked to come back
and formally approve it by the entire council. So that's the reason that you're seeing this.
I'd like to move approval of that.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Uh-huh.
Any opposed? So ordered. We have two briefings this morning. So the rest of the morning, I'm hopeful that these two briefings are relatively short, relatively straightforward. The second one on risk management overview is truly an informational only. It just kind of brings people up to speed on what the city is doing in the area of risk management, clearly an issue that is on the minds not only of cities but of entities throughout the nation today. The first one has to do with Atmos Energy and the franchise renewal. Mr. Cook is going to walk us through that. We have come to agreement on a negotiated agreement between Atmos and between the city. The staff, the city attorneys, as well as Atmos are all in agreement of it. As Mr. Cook goes through this, our decision is going to be a consensus one. It's really straightforward. Are we comfortable with this? If so, then we'll see an agenda item next week. If we're not, then we're going to have to give staff direction to go back and renegotiate that. So that's really what we want to walk away from today. After Mr. Cook goes through it, are we comfortable enough, or do we want to give direction to staff to go back and renegotiate that? So it's really an A or a B type of option. Is that tee up okay, Mr. Cook?
That tees up perfectly. That's about everything I was going to say, except I will now introduce Nick Fehrenbach. He's our manager of regulatory affairs, and he will walk through the finer points of the briefing.
Good morning, Mayor Leppert, members of the council. My purpose was to go through the Atmos Energy franchise renewal. Since I realize you're pressed for time, I'm going to skip over the explanation of utility franchising and the other franchises and go straight into the gas issues. For those of you following along on your slide deck, that moves us to slide 13. Atmos Energy Corporation does hold a certificate of convenience and necessity from the Railroad Commission that gives them the exclusive right to serve customers within the city. That also does still allow up the municipality to require a franchise, as Dallas does. Many of you have been on the council for a while or used to me up here talking about rates. Gas rates are sort of related, but that is a different issue. That's as a regulator rather than a landlord. Just to let you know where we're on the current case, Atmos did file a rate case in November of 2008. The city denied that rate increase. They appealed it to the Railroad Commission. That case, Gas Utilities Docket 9869, is still pending at the commission and hopefully will get resolved sometime in the near future. But back to franchising. Our current franchise is City Ordinance 16240. That was granted to Lone Star Gas back in, it had an initial term of 15 years to expire in 1994. It was amended by Ordinance 24980, which extended it to December of 2009. This council, by ordinance in November, extended that to March 31st to allow us to complete the negotiations. And in that franchise, there was no explicit authority for change of control issues, and that's why it's still with Lone Star Gas, even though they were merged with TXU in 96 and then Atmos in 2004. Staff did meet with Atmos on numerous occasions over the past 6 months. Negotiating for the city were Dave Cook, myself, Don Knight with the city attorney's office, and also Craig Kenton, the city auditor, had his staff meet with Atmos on the audit provisions and the document production. Negotiating on behalf of Atmos were David Parks, Susan Harris, and Erica Heiss. David and Susan are here today and are available to answer any questions if you have them. The proposed franchise is an agreement, as Mayor Leppert already lined out. It is subject to council approval, and Atmos has agreed to accept the franchise if it's adopted. Some of the key points of the franchise, Atmos, we retain our right to regulate the facilities, their placement in the right-of-way. They must comply with safety codes. And also importantly, Atmos has to relocate its facilities at their own expense to accommodate city projects. With regards to compensation, this new franchise provides for a 5% of gross revenues. That's an increase from the current franchise. It was 4%. Also, there's no deduction for bad debts. That revenue will vary greatly from year to year due to the value of gas and also weather conditions. Yes, the next 5 days we'll probably see a little more gas sold in Dallas, but the bigger issue is really the price because that fluctuates a lot. Annual revenues are estimated to be approximately $12 million a year, and this franchise will bring in about an additional $1.3 million this year, which is consistent with the budget assumptions you made back in September. Additionally, Atmos will also pay us a 5% fee on contributions in aid of construction. These are payments made by developers and customers to extend the gas plant to their premises. That's not required by the current franchise, but it's consistent with our charter. It'll only net us about another $50,000 a year, and we won't get that first payment until 2011, so it doesn't affect the current budget. Franchise fees are in lieu of all other fees and charges, with the exception of ad valorem tax, sales tax, and any special taxes that the city implements. In this franchise, we do have a right to audit to ensure that we're getting properly compensated. There is a good faith effort clause that Atmos has agreed to. Administration of this franchise is given to the city manager or her designee. Another key point is the change of control provisions, which, as I said, we didn't have in the current franchise. Atmos will be able to transfer this franchise to a parent subsidiary or affiliate, provided that entity agrees to be bound by all terms, and also that they have the essentially the same net capital and liquid assets of Atmos. Any other transfer other than those, we will have the right to approve. The term of this franchise has an initial term of 15 years. If both parties are still happy, it will automatically renew for an additional 15-year term and then provides for one-year renewals after that to the maximum of 40 years allowed under the city charter. And as Mayor Leppert very eloquently said, there are really two options. One is to adopt the franchise as negotiated by staff. It does provide control of the right-of-way. It also provides reasonable compensation. Or reject the franchise and direct staff to go back and negotiate something different. That could result in us having to extend the current franchise, and also if it's delayed, we might not receive the revenue enhancements that we've already put into the budget because they sell the majority of their gas this time of year when it's cold, so we need to take advantage of that. The city manager does recommend adopting the franchise as negotiated by staff. There will be an item next week, January 13th, on the addendum to adopt this franchise, and Atmos will have till March 1st to formally file their acceptance. And with that, I will open it up to any questions you might have.
So what you're really putting in front of us is an agreement that's got a 25%, 4% to 5%. It includes the construction elements, those sorts of things that currently aren't in the status quo. And you would believe this is competitive not only with other franchise agreements that we've got, but if you look across this region, other similar type of transactions. Is that fair?
It is similar and competitive with the other franchises that they have. Atmos serves the majority of North Texas. We were able to negotiate some things in our franchise that they didn't necessarily grant everyone else. Certainly, it's an increase over what we have now. It was a give-and-take negotiation, so can I say it's everything we ever dreamed of? No, but I believe it is a reasonable...
Fair and equitable, and you feel that, again, something that is advantageous to the city.
It is advantageous to the city, and I believe a reasonable agreement.
Okay. Mr. Allen, please.
This is really over the last couple of years, too, and I know the hard negotiations probably been in the last 4 or 5 months or so, but over the last couple of years... if not longer, with budget finances. I've watched in both with the negotiation with Atlas and also Atmos with the city itself. I am assured, based on what I've seen, that this is a good deal for both ends. The word is balance. The word is balance. Do we get everything we want? Maybe not. Same with everybody else, but you have to balance it out. And I think that the negotiations have been hard, thorough, and at the end of the day, are in the best interest of the citizens. So I will be Do we need a motion for this?
No, I'm just trying to get a consensus. The actual motion, if we go forward, will be on the agenda for next
week. Well, I will be voting yes when it does come to.
Thank you. Mr. Newman-Quinn.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you for your work, Mr. Fehrenbach.
That's correct.
Mm, okay. Sounds like a good German name.
Possibly.
Okay, good. No, we like that. Okay, that's good. Newman is a good German name, too. Okay. A couple questions. On slide 23, talks about right to audit and good faith effort. What has been the city's experience with the auditing process of the existing agreement?
Under the existing agreement, we did have a right to audit. We had some disputes last time the auditor went in to look at their books, and it wasn't over our right to audit, but it was over what documents the company had to produce. And we got into sort of a very protracted argument about what was going to be produced, what they would let us look at. And we resolved a lot of that in this document and sort of spelled out more what they have to do, and the auditor's comfortable with these provisions.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you to repeat the last statement you made, because that's really what I'm zeroing into. Is our city auditor who does the audit, is it our city auditor that does the audit?
Yes.
Is our city auditor, are you speaking for the city auditor and saying that they have a good constructive working relationship, that they feel that this is an agreement that they'll be able to audit and certify back to the council on an ongoing basis?
City auditor staff met with Atmos on a couple, the financial folks met, and the auditor informed me that they were happy with these provisions as they were written.
Okay, so we've had a satisfactory relationship as far as audit, and the auditor is fine with this going forward.
That's correct.
Okay, good. Walk me through the franchise fee process. If we agree, which it sounds like, I mean, it seems like I'm in favor of this and so forth, if we agree with the change of the franchise agreement, and the rate goes to 5%. Is this a direct pass-through to customers of Atmos? Does this go into their rate base? How does this affect the consumer that's paying for gas?
Under Atmos' current tariffs for service, franchise fees are included in a separate tariff that's added on to customers' bills. That tariff reads that they are allowed to collect an amount to recover their franchise fees, so it would be passed through. It's up to them to do it, but they have the opportunity to pass those fees through, so it would be a slight increase.
So has it, I know you can't directly speak for Atmos, but has it been the experience that Atmos passes it directly through?
Yes.
Okay, so if we agree to this, we are agreeing to a direct pass-through increase to customers of the Atmos base, well, commercial and residential.
Commercial, residential, and industrial customers also, yes.
Commercial, residential, industrial. Okay. Go to 19. I found it interesting when I read the presentation, Mayor and council members, that there's no deduction for bad debts. That's an interesting deal. Is that customary?
And this is actually a change from our current franchise.
I detected that.
And this actually we first did with TXU, and their prior franchise, they, through agreement with us, stopped deducting for bad debts. And so we asked Atmos to give us the same consideration, and that was one of those issues that we fought over for a while.
Well, that's in the city's favor, so I'm not objecting to that. I just found it interesting that, you know, that provision isn't there. Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
I agree with you, Mr. Newman. That's an interesting addition. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of questions. I see here on Section 2 on C, where the city manager talks about the right-of-way, the construction on public right-of-way. One of the concerns, and this is just a concern that I hope Atmos will do, when they work on the right-of-way, at least in my community, I can't speak for other communities, they do not pave the streets. When they go underneath, deal with any type of gas emergency, they put asphalt back on top and leave it as a lump. So when people drive over, you can feel the lump. They do not pave it well. So I'm asking, and that's one of the things they talk about, Fluffy Right Away, ROW. I'm asking that they go back and make sure that they put it back the way it was.
And that is actually covered by our general right-of-way use ordinance and our police powers. They're allowed to put down the temporary asphalt patch, but they are supposed to come back and repair that to the condition it was before.
Can we put, because it says guarantees you submit engineer plans, projects, flood construction, and public right-of-way to the city. So any type of public right-of-way that needs to be done, the city is saying they would like to know where those locations are at, and all work done. But I would like to see something that they put it back the way it is. It's just so many. When they do the public right-of-way, they go in underneath, do the gas repair, whatever they're going to do. They don't put it back. They don't come back and pave over it. They put this black asphalt, and they leave it as it is.
That, under the current rules, that should be corrected if there are locations where it hasn't been done.
Mayor, can we get it in?
We need to get inspectors out there to look at it.
One is, I think it's important to reflect Ms. Davis's comments to our staff, the actual people in the field, so that they're looking at this more closely.
Right.
I can see Susan over there is already making a note of this from the Atma standpoint. So kind of the combination of those,
mm-hmm.
can we just be a little bit more diligent on that?
That's all I'm asking.
Susan, is that fair?
That's the only thing I have. Thank you.
Mr. Salazar, please.
Yeah, the provision where they can transfer the rights to another company, I guess my question is what safeguards are there where, you know, under certain conditions they can do it without our approval. I guess the question is that, you know, what safeguards we have as far as our accounting to assure that the company is going to be able to fulfill its commitments of taking over the franchise.
Well, and if they're transferring it to a parent subsidiary or affiliate, which is the only time they can transfer it without our approval, there are two conditions there, that new entity has to agree to be bound by all the terms of the franchise, and they have to have the same net capital and liquid assets as Atmos so that they have the financial resources. If it's some other entity, a third party, we have the right to approve that, and with that is the right to not approve.
Okay. Well, if you can transfer to a subsidiary or an affiliate, but then they sell off that affiliate after the transfer is completed, do we have any recourse?
Well, then once it's transferred to the affiliate, then that affiliate can't transfer it without our approval.
No, I'm saying they sell the affiliate.
No, that's a change of ownership. Then that would get into the last.
Would that be a change of ownership?
Well, it's transfer of control that's actually in the franchise. If you sell the entity, there is a transfer of control, even though it's not a transfer of ownership.
Okay.
And this was part of the issue in the Atmos TXU merger because we didn't have explicit authority over transfer of control, only on transfer of the franchise. Because it was control and not franchise, we had an argument about whether or not we really had authority to do that. We just clarified that in this ordinance so that we know going forward.
Okay. Well, I looked at the issues that were raised in the briefing, especially all the different points that we are now in a better position, I think, than we were before. So I will be supporting it. Thank you.
And I think, Mr. Salazar, you raised the two issues, too. Whenever there's a control, it allows us to step back in. And even if it's between entities under the corporate umbrella, they still have to have the same capital. So they couldn't decrease the ability to meet the obligations.
That's correct.
Ms. Marzullon, please.
This is an issue that we had talked about during the budget process. And it's one of the reasons that I voted against the budget, because it is, in essence, a tax increase in disguise. It is a pass-through to our citizens and our businesses. And so while all of the other terms may be great, I'm not going to be voting for it. And I also do want to make a comment that it's not just Ms. Davis's district in which we have lumps of tar on the road. District 13 has a lot of them, too. And it really would be a good thing if you look at how your repair and street paving is done. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. McGraw, please.
Thank you very much. On page number 23, the right to audit, can you just briefly tell me the cycle of auditing? Is it just our right to audit at any time, or is there a cycle period that this happens?
We can audit at any time. There is no limitation on the audit. Some of our prior agreements, we could only look back at the prior 2 or 3 years, but in this, it's a strict right to audit. We can audit the full 15 years of the franchise at the end, or we can do it annually or semi-annually or monthly if the city auditor wanted to commit those kind of resources and there was a need for it.
Thank you. And then on the repair that Ms. Davis and Ms. Margolin brought up, perhaps we can discuss this with Atmos in terms of taking a photograph or a video of what the street looked like before, and then after the repairs, have a photograph of what it is at that point, and that way we all, you know, it's all transparent to make sure that, you know, the street or road is at the same level before the repair work.
Well, and under our right-of-way use regulations, Atmos and any other user of the right-of-way has to get a street cut permit to cut the street. Part of that cut permit is city inspectors are supposed to go out afterwards and make sure the repairs are made. If there have been some that overlooked, we need people to call the 311 and report that so we can get inspectors back out there a second time and get those fixed.
Well, it's quite obvious that, I'm sure if we go around the, you know, the table here, I think that more council members would definitely have more complaints from our constituents. So I think that maybe we should talk to Atmos about this and any other folks that have to get a permit cut. That in many cases, I'm not saying all, but in many cases, the street repair is not done, I think, satisfactory to neighborhoods and constituents' satisfaction. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hoffman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of concerns here. Back to page 14, or slide 14. Atmos filed a rate case with the city on November 5th, 2008. Dallas denied the rate increase. It is under appeal. And now we're saying that the extra 1% that the city will be getting will be a pass-through to the citizens and business owners. What impact does this rate case that is still pending have on additional charges that will be given back to the citizens with the increase in the rate?
The franchise fee recovery tariff is not currently on appeal. They didn't seek to change that.
Right.
The wording of that tariff just reads an amount necessary to recover the fees. It doesn't prescribe an amount, so that can change almost automatically. Now, the rate case that's pending, if the rates change, which I'm sure they will change some, obviously, if the Railroad Commission gives them a rate increase, then we will be getting 5% of some larger amount than we are now. If they order a rate decrease, we'd be getting the same percentage of a smaller amount. But we don't really know right now what the final ruling will be.
And do we know when that case will be
certified? The case is actually scheduled for the Railroad Commission's public meeting next Tuesday. I will be at that hearing. The Railroad Commission has a two-reading requirement, so they will discuss the case, but they won't make a final decision until their second public meeting in January, which I believe is the 26th, and Atmos is nodding their head, so it is the 26th.
So we'll know this month on the appeal by Atmos.
Right. Now, once the commission makes its ruling, now obviously either party can ask for a reconsideration, and after that process, then it could be appealed to district court. We still have some appeals in district courts from prior rate cases going back many years that are working their way through the system.
Wow. Okay, so we're not sure on the finalization of that appeal. Going back to the 4% to 5% and that percentage increase going to our constituents, how will you let the general consumer know, I guess this is for Atmos,
that there is going to be an increase based on what you're telling us today?
There's not a requirement of franchise to give notice, and I don't believe there's anything, because that factor is an automatic adjustment. There wouldn't need any public notice. Now, obviously, we publish the ordinance that says the fee's going up, but that's not really a notice to the consumers that their bill's going to change. And again, we're talking about changing that 5% fee on their bill, so it's not going to be that significant. But I realize that to some people, a dollar change in the bill does make a difference.
So would you, what percentage of their bill do you think would increase? 1%? What their current use is?
It'd be about a 1% increase.
Totally. That would be my major concern. And I know Ms. Davis was the one that really kind of brought this to light, is we need to be sure that if there is going to be an increase, that people understand what's going to happen and that it doesn't just show up on a bill one day. Thank you.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. This is my second round of comments, my last. Ms. Medrano made a very important point that I'll speak to the council on, and I'll speak to staff on, and Ryan, since you're the senior and the staff in the room, and that is these street cuts. And this is not a problem that's just specific to Ms. Medrano in District 2 or mine in District 3. It's this whole process of street cuts. And I'm not picking on Atmos, but you're the player in the room asking for an agreement to be codified by the council next week, and I think I'm going to be able to support this, but the larger issue is these street cuts and the process that we go through as a city. And, you know, she made a very interesting point, is before and after. Because at the very minimum, what should happen is that whether it's AT&T, Atmos, TXU, cable company, or whoever touches city streets, they should restore it in equal or better condition. And unfortunately, that's not the case. I won't belabor this, but in the back of my mind now, I have a need, Ryan, to be able for professional staff to be able to tell us what's the process that staff utilizes to ensure that the streets that are touched by vendors servicing our neighborhoods, servicing our citizens, are put back to equal or better condition. Because I can't say that's the case in my district, and Ms. Medrano always said that is hers, and I'll bet you if we took a survey, and I see a lot of nodding heads here. Now, I'm not trying to create a firestorm, Mayor, but I think this is something very relevant to the infrastructure of our city, and we all went through this last budget process and cut back our funding and those sort of things, and we certainly can't move forward with an agreement unless we say, how are we making sure this is adhered to? Could you respond to that, Brian?
Mr. Newman, yeah, we obviously have a street cut process, street cut program that requires exactly what you just said, and I'd be happy to have us put together a small briefing for the appropriate committee. Transportation is probably the right one, and show you that process from beginning to end.
I'd actually interject one more thing, though. I think, I went through that. There were two issues that jumped out to me. One was the publication communication piece. And then the second was what's been articulated by Mr. Newman, Ms. Medrano, and others, is the street repair. It seems to me that there are some objections to it, but in general, I think I'm getting a consensus of a move forward. I would ask you, though, between now and next week when we get together, that you would have a conversation with Atmos on both of these issues and come back to us when this comes up on the item, Ryan, and be a little bit more specific. I understand in the agreement says it'll be returned to existing state, but come back to us a little bit more on the policies and procedures that give confidence that we'll actually get to that point, because it sounds like there's a number of concerns among the council that although that's the agreement, in practice we're not getting to there. So some of it responsibility may be on Atmos. There may be a lot of the responsibility on the city too, but if you'd come back and articulate to us how we can feel comfortable that what's in the document will actually come to practice in the streets of the city of Dallas. And then the second piece is just some sense of, it doesn't have to be long, but some sense of the communication publication of this. Does that sound like it'd be helpful to everybody on the council?
And Mayor, let me share. Ryan, try to get to us before Wednesday, even individually, to let us know how the process is coming along, so we can be very comfortable about that.
Mayor, I'm not trying to pick on Atmos.
No, not at all.
It applies
to all these utilities.
May help us all get to that point.
Thank you,
regardless of what it is. So we use this as an example. It's a good opportunity for the city and the vendor in this sense to sit down and make sure that we're doing a better case of implementing the agreement that we've both sided with.
And then one other thing, Mayor Ryan, in future discussions with other vendors, let's do the same process up front when we come to anyone. Mr. Newman has said that touching our streets.
Yeah.
Let's make sure that we cover that in on the front end.
Yeah, I think we understand that now, and we'll provide that information prior to your vote next Wednesday.
Super. And then we'll ask you to kind of when the item comes up to tee that.
We'll do that.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time and effort. Our second briefing has to do with risk management. I mentioned this is really just an overview, kind of informational on the work that's been done. Brian, who's your...
David Etheridge is going to kick this off. One of the expectations when Mr. Etheridge came to join us was to improve upon our risk management processes and to see if there was a way to save some money within this particular function. David, if you go ahead and kick this off and then introduce our speaker on this topic.
Thank you, Ryan. Approximately 5 years ago, there were several outside entities that conducted efficiency studies on the human resources risk management practices. As a result, the city manager's office charged the human resource department to develop several cost containment strategies. But one of those strategies was to hire a very capable risk manager. And so your speaker today is Ms. Deborah Johnson, who we did a national search on and recruited 2 years ago, and she's now the city's risk manager. Deborah.
Thank you, Mr. Anthony. As previously stated, our overview will be very brief. If you would start on page 4.
Can you speak into the mic just a little bit?
Okay. Page 4, it gives you a quick glance of the 5 sections that are within the risk management division, and we'll just speak briefly on each one of those as we go through the presentation. Our next slide will be on page 6. One of the first units that we have within the risk management division is our commercial insurance and our facilities inspection department. Here we have a current total insured value of your insurance placement, and you'll see our FY08-09 values and our FY09-10 values, where our values increased by 5.5%. Based on that, we have our renewal rates, which is per $100 of your total insured value, which is all the value of your properties listed on your schedule. And there we were able to negotiate a 12% decrease in your renewal rate for this fiscal year. And that negotiation was based on our same terms and conditions as the previous year. On page 7, what you'll see is what we actually paid in our annual premium. Our annual premium actually represents about a $220,000 savings in premium costs. In addition to that, I wanted to just outline that we did receive a $20,000 no-claim bonus from our aviation policy, which means we carry an aviation policy with the city. We had no claims on that, so we were refunded about $20,000. The second part on page 8 of our commercial insurance and facility inspections deals with the actual inspections. We conduct risk management oversees 2 types of inspections on the city's property. One of those is a structural and engineering type inspection, which is done by an outside firm, Harford, who is our prevention law specialty. And also we have what we call our life safety inspections, which is our safe work environment, which is done by our safety officers. If you'll see in FY07-08, HSB actually conducted 57 inspections, and you see your findings listed there. Our categories that you see listed are actually based on the level of hazard and the level of cost that is associated with each of those findings. Your life safety inspections on page 9 once again, these are the inspections that are conducted by the safety officers. They are internal, and these are some of your basic household keeping findings that they find and make recommendations to each department for corrective actions. If you go to slide 11 talks about our risk transfer unit, which is also we call our contract management section. This section assists all the other city departments with evaluating their contract-related exposures as they enter into business agreements. And here what we see is we have a 2% increase in the number of certificates that we are reviewing. Certificates are simply those documents that we keep track of where vendors are maintaining the appropriate insurance in alignment with their contract. And then we have our contract reviews, which is the second portion of that, where we represent a 10% increase, which we're seeing more and more contracts being brought through the city. If you would, follow me to page 13. This is our third unit within the risk management department, and this is primarily our claims management unit dealing with your liability and your subrogation. Our liability is responsible for the investigation of payment of claims that's caused actually by the city. Here what you'll see is that we have a 12% decrease in the number of claims that were brought against the city. And the dollars paid, we had a 52% increase, but primarily that increase was due to two bad claims as noted here. We had a class action lawsuit that we did pay out last year, and we also had a zoo claim. On page 14, we talk about our subrogation. Subrogation is actually opposite of our liability. Our subrogation deals with the city going out and recovering those funds that are due to us as a result of a third party damaging our property or our employees. And once again here what you'll see is a 21% increase in the number of claims that we did go out and recover, as well as a 62% increase in the amount of funds that we recovered from a third party. On page 16 is our workers' compensation unit. Basically, what you see on this particular slide is a representation of a reduction in our frequency and our severity of our workers' comp claims. We processed 9% less claims, as well as we had a 9% reduction, which was close to, well, a little over $1 million in what we paid out in our work comp payments. On page 17, our limited duty program. We placed 24% more employees in the limited duty program, and the limited duty program is very essential to our budget because the more employees that we can bring back to work and keep actively engaged in the workplace represents the less dollars that will impact the work comp budget. Another key point on our workers' compensation unit was our implementation of our certified network. This, if you will remember, we brought to the council for approval, and it was approved in May of 2009, where the state of Texas made it possible through a House bill for us to enter into a certified network. The primary benefits of that network would mean that we would have credentialed physicians actually treating our employees. We would have more quality control over the physicians, as well as being able to have cost containment services provided to us. The law now states that by 2011, all PPO networks for workers' compensation will be non-existent, so all governmental entities will need to enter into some type of a certified network arena. And I'm pleased to announce that the City of Dallas is in the forefront with the certified network. We had an opportunity to go and represent the state of Texas at the Public Risk Management Association to advise other cities on what it means to be into the network, how they implement the network, and what challenges that you will face in that network. Page 18 just gives you a six-month look at what we've experienced by being in the network. Beginning in May through October, you'll see that our employees are missing 61% less days in the workplace. We're closing claims faster, and we're also paying out less in claims. On page 19 is our safety unit, safety and loss prevention. And the two focus areas here that they looked at is our vehicle collisions as well as our training hours. And as the presentation states, we had a 9% reduction, which was 91 less collisions that we had in the previous year. And we offered about 5% less training hours. However, those training hours was because we shifted the way that we were actually training our employees. We went to a more focused class schedule rather than having general classes offered. On page 20, We did once again held a health and safety fair conference, and we had a slight increase of the number of employees that came through the safety conference. Listed under the other accomplishments, I do want to highlight that we implemented a citywide collision review board as well as a citywide collision appeal board, and that program, is, as well as the results, are fully explained in the appendix. That concludes that briefing. Do we have any questions?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for your presentation. A couple questions.
Yes.
There's been some discussion in the press, and I read this in I read a city auditor's report prior about the inventory count of city facilities.
Yes, sir.
Where are we on making sure we know collectively as a city what facilities we are insuring and taking responsibility for?
Well,
does the right hand know what the left hand is doing?
Well, I spoke to our assistant city manager, Forrest Turner, this morning about that article, and he has decided to take the lead on that project. So to answer your question in short form, yes, the right does know what the left is doing. Where we're going to go from, as a result of that article and how we want to address it, I'm going to leave that to
you. And I'm not responding just to the article. I'm going back to the auditor's report that I read, and this particular number, slide 6. On slide 6, it talks about approximately 800 facilities, and I'm not. I just want to make sure that we have a sense of what we're doing and how we're doing it, and making sure right and left are center.
To respond to your comment, we have a clear sense of how many facilities we own.
Okay, good.
And there is a universal list.
Good.
We're working toward having a database that would do the same as a manual list. So
good.
We have that.
Okay. Sure. How does this, I'm a little confused as it relates to the council on a periodic basis approves expenditures from the liability reserve fund. I assume the liability reserve fund is solely for lawsuits. Is that correct, Tom? I mean, I'm confused about the reserve fund that we budget each year versus the liability issues and claims that come up here. Because sometimes we're settling as a council claims, sometimes it's lawsuits. What's the difference? Walk me through the difference between those things, please.
Claims are also paid out of the liability reserve.
Okay, so then what is, so why aren't they all covered under the insurance policy?
We're self-insured.
This is
property insurance, insuring our facilities.
Property insurance. So if someone falls and hurts themselves on a city property, it's claimed through this insurance?
No, sir. That's a liability issue. So
let's go back to the liability claim.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Property damage. Okay. I'm still a little confused.
Your property insurance it covers your buildings, fire,
flood. So if a building it gets destroyed by wind or whatever.
Yes, sir. It's covered under the commercial
insurance. So this is strictly property. There's no liability component to this.
No liability.
Okay, then what is, it talks about claims. Thank you, Sheffy. It talks about claims. Thank you, Chef. It says 1,433 claims.
What page 1400, is it on,
I'm on
sir?
Page 13.
Okay.
It says 1,433 claims. Mm-hmm. Claims for property damage?
No, those are liability claims.
I thought you said liability is, I'm confused.
If there is a claim from a citizen alleging that we have done some type of damage to them.
We hit their car.
We hit their car. That,
I
that
thought this
is,
was for city property, though.
Yes, sir. Okay, let me explain to you. When you're talking about property, you are solely talking about your facilities, your structures, okay? When
defined
you're talking
as
about,
real estate as opposed to personal property.
Yes, sir. When you're talking about our liability, that property damage that they're alleging that we've damaged, it comes under our liability, which is self-insured. It has nothing to do with your building and your facilities.
Mr. Newman,
I still don't understand
that. There are different components here. She's talking about the entire risk management program here. We're talking about workers' compensation. We're talking about liability.
Oh, okay.
We're talking about property insurance. She's kind of sectionalized this as she went through. So
the $7.2 million, Ryan, includes workers' comp claims?
That she's got that in on a different component of this presentation.
There were five components.
Okay. Okay.
Do we allocate these costs to the enterprise funds? Or is it all absorbed by the general fund?
No, it's allocated through the enterprise as well.
And is that a concurrent allocation, or is this a retroactive allocation, or we do this at the end of the year? I mean, how is this done in order to make sure that these proprietary funds, these enterprise funds, pay for their fair share? California Utilities, Aviation Fund, Convention Center, so forth, Development Services, all those?
Experience and exposure.
Okay. So it's done retroactively based on experience and exposure?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And we look at that on a regular basis?
Every year.
That's good. Okay, that's what I want to hear. We have, all right. Okay, good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Just want to go over, please.
Why does your presentation stop before our presentation stops? We've got a lot of additional pages on premium costs and, we keep going. So why does your presentation stop?
Those are the appendix. That's just back.
Because I would really like someone to run through some of the numbers with me, but you can't display them, so that's difficult to do.
Sure, would you? You want to keep going?
We're happy to keep going, Ms. Margolin,
good.
Or if you'd like,
I would.
Why don't you run through
that? I would like you to do it, to just keep going and explain the dollars and why we're spending more in some areas and not in other areas, and just kind of run through that quickly, if that's possible.
Can you tell me where you are in your presentation, ma'am?
Let's see. I am beginning on
25.
Oh, 25 was just showing you the calculation of where we saved that $220,000 in our premium,
okay.
Where we showed you our renewal rate based on our per $100 of our total insured value.
Okay, go to 26.
Yes, ma'am.
I could not read this.
Okay.
My eyes aren't that good.
Okay.
But it appears to me that it's showing an increase in property insurance premiums. So I'm wondering why that is when we seem to be doing so well in minimizing our damage, our property damage. So why are our insurance rates going up?
Because our values went up.
We're insuring more property?
Yes, ma'am. Our total insured value went up about 5%.
So our insured, what I'm trying to get is, so if our premiums are going up 7%, but our insured values are going up 5%, then we do, in fact, have an increase. Correct? No?
No, ma'am.
No.
No. Our values went up approximately 5.5. We went from $3.2 billion to $3.4 billion.
So wouldn't you expect
our
insurance premiums to rise that much or less if we have had good results?
It should rise. But we negotiated an actual decrease.
I don't see how a
7.27%
increase is a decrease.
I think what you're saying is you said the total values went up 5%, but our premium went up 7%. So you've got a spread of 2%.
Right.
Why the spread of 2%? You may come back and say that it's the market that changed it. I don't know that.
Essentially if our losses are declining. I'm curious to know why our premiums went up. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Mayor. That's what I'm trying to get at. Don't know.
I don't have an answer for that.
Okay.
The one thing that was highlighted, and if you would go to page 6, and what Ms. Johnson was sharing with you, although the value of the property went up, and although there's a 2% spread, as the mayor pointed out, we still negotiated a decrease in the renewal rate. So when you look at the renewal rate, in essence, we're paying less this year than we paid last year. So we are constantly dealing with the fact that, yes, we may be leasing or purchasing more properties, and yes, the value may be going up, but we're constantly focusing in on the renewal rate of what we're actually paying to cover those facilities.
Right. We may need to go over this offline because it still doesn't make any sense to me. If we could go then to the next slide, which I think would be, where are we now? I've lost my place. All right. And so there,
we are looking at a decrease, no, an increase also, a substantial increase from year to year. Although when you go back to 2004-05, obviously we were paying a lot more. I'm really interested in understanding the trends in the premium cost on all levels. And so maybe we could meet separately, because that's really what I care the most about.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
And maybe what you can do is simplify these schedules and simply say by each major exposure category, what was the exposure? What was the premium change and then the differential? And just off to the side say, was that due to market? Experience gave us an advantage, experience didn't give us an advantage, historical experience. It may be more than 1 year, because the carriers are going to look at more than a single year.
Right.
So what you might do is just try to simplify into each of the exposures and walk through a simple one. And maybe the best thing to do is, as we get down into the detail, Mr. Allen, maybe you could get your committee together and do a little bit of a deeper dive on this in the particular ones. That might be the way to go about it.
We'll definitely do that.
Thank you.
I was going to comment on that, because obviously the premiums are big, but also we will dwell into, and Mr. Evans, I believe you pointed out, about the liability reserve fund, and that's a judgment call on experience and exposure. And so that's a big dollar amount that we do that. And so we will ask for that to be explained to us and in detail along with this.
Yeah, and make sure you do the split out, because on what we insure, largely I think what you're going to do there is in a deep dive get into the process for renegotiation. In other words, what other bids did you get? How did you go about it? Who are you brokering? All that sort of thing. That's one piece. Mm-hmm. The bigger concern I think Mr. Allen's going at right now is where we're self-insured, how in the world are we getting our arms around that? Now, we had some awfully good experience. Clearly, the workers' comp, which is a major exposure when you've got 12,000 employees, that one went down. So I thought there were some good examples of that, both in claims and total dollars paid out. So that was real positive. So we want to continue that. And that's the bigger number. I mean, that's the one that concerns me. But I think the issues on where we're insuring, if you go through the process, I think you can allay some of the concerns that you're hearing.
We'll bring that to budget, finance, and audit.
Ms. Davis, I think you had a comment.
Yes. With the change in insurance at the White House, how does any of this fit into the picture where everybody has to have insurance by a certain...
This wouldn't affect it.
At all.
They're talking simply
the
individual health insurance. We're really talking about the insuring of structures and
buildings. Structures and buildings. Okay.
So that conversation isn't affecting this.
Okay.
Problem.
Okay. Then.
What would affect this more is really the experience of the carriers, and to be truthful with you, where the capital markets are. So sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. It has nothing to do with what's happening. That it may be an experience. That just exactly what the loss exposure and the loss experiences is of the carriers. Mr. Atkins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. On the liability of our properties that we self-insured on, can you tell me the difference that some building that we own, some building that we lease out, mm-hmm. And the people we lease it to have liability insurance covers of the building? Mm-hmm. Are we double insuring that building? Risk management also insuring the building. The people who is a tenant is insuring our building also?
No, sir. What we do is we review the rental or the lease agreement, and all of the agreements read differently. So some may be required to have the building coverage. Some may be required to just cover their contents and their liability.
Okay. But on the building, is there a breakdown? Because you said that the building that the state is on,
mm-hmm.
how many of those buildings that we insure and risk management, how many that the tenant insures? Just in case the tenant do not cover it, then we got to cover. Are we covering those buildings? So I didn't see the breakdown.
Right. No, sir. There's not a breakdown. We have an umbrella coverage. So if we at any point have what we call an unnamed location on our schedule and something happened to a facility that is not listed on our insurance, we're automatically insured for up to, I think it's $15 million, subject to our deductible.
Do
but
that.
We do try to correlate to to make sure that the buildings, whenever someone leases a facility and they are required to cover the building coverage, that's where our risk transfer unit comes into play to make sure that the insurance is actually in effect. And each year they review the request a certificate of insurance showing evidence that they do have the required insurance.
So the risk manager could have been a possibility that even though we self-insured, could the tenant be insured by the same underwriter?
Well, first of all, sir, we're not self-insured because we purchase insurance.
I mean, but what I'm saying that could the tenant be insured by the same company that we are insured, that we buy coverage from the building?
There's a possibility.
There's a possibility, right?
There's a possibility.
So how do we check and balance that?
Let me get clarification on what you're asking me, because I think I'm misunderstanding you. What you're trying to find out is if there's duplicate coverage on a facility.
That's correct.
And here again, what we do is whenever a lease comes in, we review the lease to see if the tenant is required to cover the building or the city will maintain the coverage on the building. If the tenant is required, then we drop our insurance and we monitor the tenant's insurance to make sure that the facility is always covered. So I'm not going to say that it never happens, but we do have mechanisms in place to try to capture and make sure that we don't have, one, that we don't have facilities that are not insured, and two, that we don't have facilities that are being insured by both the city and the tenant.
And in theory, they're insuring different things.
They
might insure the shell versus, in the case of a tenant, either the liability or contents within the structure.
Right. So
but in some cases, you might be insured the shell. We might be insured the shell, and they also insure the shell.
It depends on the
day.
But I'd be surprised if it's a fair question. But I'd be surprised if a lessee would be in that position. That'd be really unusual position. The lessee to insure the shell of a building. I can't imagine why that would happen.
If they built the shell of the building. In aviation, I'm talking aviation.
Well,
they build the shell.
I think as Johnson said earlier, there are a lot of variations on how these things are structured. I do think that would be a very unusual. Aviation might be an exception.
That's correct.
But what she's trying to say is every time we have one of these tenants, we go through and try to make sure that we haven't doubly insured, and we ensure that we are insured.
Well, for aviation, I'll bet that's a triple net.
That could be
triple net.
Right.
That's a triple net. So I don't think you can.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it very much. I think the two things that have come out, one, again, go into the deep dive, and again, split up kind of the exposure where we're self-insuring versus the ones where we are insuring with an outside carrier. Those ones, again, I think the important thing is to go through the process, because you'll find out there's a lot of nuances on the rates, but the process of going to ensure that we're getting competitive, and I think that'd be helpful. The second thing, and I just think that this is kind of unacceptable, we've got to get our arms around, and you've got to make us feel comfortable, that article that was in the paper, and I really believe it does fall on risk management. Now, I understand that one entity of the city could call a shack, a guard shack, a separate structure, and you're not, because you've got it built in as part of an overall building that's next to it that's got it. I understand that. All I'm asking you to do, and I think the rest of the council is come to resolution on this one. It does not, I mean, my hope is that it's not an issue, that the perception got out there that we don't know. Let's make sure that we address that perception question, because we look bad on it, and there's no reason to look bad. There is a right count. You've got to have the right count. You've got to know what the building structures are. So for something to get out there, we look bad. Put that to rest. I guess that's all I'm asking you to do, put it to rest really quickly.
We can put it to rest here today. The auditor office is here, and we've talked, and so we both agree that issue is clear. We have a list. There was some confusion in terms of the news stories, but we have a universal list. We'll work to make clear in terms of which departments use different lists for other reasons, but there is one list for the city of Dallas for all of our facilities.
And that's what I'm getting to. So I would ask you however best, and maybe it's just to call the reporter and say, here's what the story is. I just don't like that perception.
We'll do that.
Being around there. Because I know all of you spend enough time and effort not to have something like that happen. And again, it looks bad, and there's an awful lot of time and effort that's gone into it, as indicated by your presentation today. You have to understand what our coverages are and how we do it.
Can we get a copy of that list, that universal list?
Merlin, but I just would like to add to say that the auditor, does he have a responsibility to get with at least you or the council member even before a story get out there? How did the story get out there? I mean, I would think the auditor, and I'm not trying to bring up. I read the email, but for something to get out to the media, I mean, I'm just trying to figure out. You know, there's a lot of open doors in City Hall. I mean, everything gets out.
Go ahead. I'm Gary Lewis. I'm one of the assistant city auditors. I'd be more than happy to answer your question.
Mm-hmm.
When we publish a report, it always goes to the mayor and members of city council before it goes to the press. What happened in this case is the press did contact the city auditor's office, and they really wasn't going to make any comment. And whenever they did contact us, it's my understanding what the city auditor did is after talking to the one news reporter, he did send an email to the Budget Finance Audit Accountability Committee and also, I think, to the mayor, let them know that there's been some news coverage. This last issue was, the article in the paper this morning was just a phone call that took place, and I also think the council members were notified that the city auditor talked to them. But it's not our practice to go to the press with anything.
And I'm just saying, between all of us, get this resolved. Again,
right.
My sense is there's probably different definitions, so one department's counting something that's different because that's in their interest of it, what their responsibilities are. But let's just put this to bed. It's a dumb issue to be sitting out there.
Right, and I think the comment that Forrest made is exactly right. The whole issue is just to have one robust database and solve this whole thing. It's kind of a simplistic process when you get into it is really what amounts.
Yeah, and it's the responsibility of risk management. You audit to ensure that it's accurate.
Right.
Mr. Newman, do you want
to ask? I was just going to make a comment to the manager, and that's Ryan today. Wouldn't EBS be the Equipment and Building Services? Aren't they responsible? I mean, this councilman views EBS as the person that takes care of all city facilities, period, the end. Risk management's job is to make sure the facilities that EBS has are properly insured and that sort of thing. So is that where is the department that's responsible for this?
Well,
because committees and cities don't make decisions. Individuals are responsible. Who?
Well, I think what the mayor is trying to say is, not to put words in your mouth, Mayor, is that we may have to have an absolute comprehensive list for insurance purposes. And so the risk management list has to be absolutely accurate as it relates to our property. But you're right in terms of the maintenance of the facilities. EBS has to have a comprehensive list of facilities that require maintenance, and so they are the lead maintenance department.
And almost they're structures that probably don't fall under EBS.
In other words, that Ryan, you didn't answer the question. What I asked was, is it correct for me to assume as a councilman that EBS is responsible for city facilities?
Not necessarily, because there are several departments that are responsible.
Therein lies the news story.
Well, but no, because EBS would not get something that we've got out on a triple net. If we've got something out on a triple net, and that's my point, that has to go back to risk management because we have an exposure there, but we don't have any responsibility for the building. We don't need to have anybody go out there. So that's where I'm going, that in the end, risk management ought to be the entity within the city that ties everything together because that's where if we own four walls that have a square foot, we still have an exposure. That's the responsibility of risk management to tie the entire city.
And back to Mr. Atkins' point earlier, that we have a lot of facilities that are aviation facilities, that are city-owned facilities that EBS is not responsible for.
I open it. Miss Bygone and Mr. Allen.
I understand, Mayor, what you're saying about the triple net buildings. However, they do need to be on an inventory list because someday they may not be triple net and the city may be responsible for them. So somewhere we need to have an entire
list. And that's what I was saying as my goal is absolutely, but that ought to be the list that risk management has because if they don't have it, then we have a risk that we don't know about.
Right, but what I'm saying, too, is that EBS ought to know about it and check it off as managed by somebody else.
That's the natural list,
but
to me, the shoulders that need to bear this are risk management. They can distribute the list and everybody can do whatever they want, but from our standpoint of looking at the overall financial position and exposure of the city, to me, that's risk management.
Well, yes. I mean, we have to make sure that all these are covered, whether it's insurance or self-insurance, but we also have to make sure they're all maintained. So they're two separate things.
As I said, triple net, we don't do any maintenance.
Right. Okay.
Fair enough. Mrs. Vallon, do you want to
try to bring us to a close?
Just make it short and sweet.
This is the biggest issue we got. Where's that?
Well, and I agree. The only reason I think we have a news story on this is because lack of communication between the audit staff and the management itself is all it boils down to. As you go back and you look, normally audit does their report, and they'll work with management. They'll come to a conclusion. This was broadcast prior to going through the entire process, and that is why we have a bad perception that's out there. So communication is key, and we'll continue to make sure that it stays good communication and that these type of premature reports do not go out before all of the facts are made known.
Right, and we need to put it to bed, and we need to make sure in the future, David, that, again, I think there's a lot of explanations. What is the definition of a building of one group may not be, but we just need to communicate. And I'm less concerned about the press. I'm more concerned about getting back to the populace of the city, that they feel comfortable that we're doing the right things, we've got control of the assets that they pay for, all of those components. And as I said, I can come up with 10 different explanations of that article. That's not the issue. The issue is we've just got to make sure that we're building confidence. And that article, for whatever reason, didn't do it. Put it to bed. Appreciate it. Thank you. Well, with that, what I intend to do now is we'll go ahead and have our speakers. We'll go ahead and have Madam Secretary, we'll call our speakers. Then we'll go into our executive session. That will complete us for today.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Your first speaker will be Dolores Powell, followed by Ernestine Anderson. And I will recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. All individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. The timers are on both screens. Please stay within your 3 minutes that are allotted. When the timer turns to zero, please allow the next individual their turn. Address your comments to the chair, Mayor Leppard. Again, your first speaker is Dolores Powell. Not present. Ernestine Anderson. If you'll please state your name and address for the record, and then proceed with your comments. Thank you. You may step up to the podium, Ms. Anderson. Do you need some assistance?
Good morning to everybody. I thank God for the mayor of the city and Dallas and those that work on the board. It's good to be here another day and another year. And I thank God my third granddaughter's birthday tomorrow. Anyhow, I'm calling about me and my house, 821 East 10th Street, where I was born and raised in Oak Cliff. My mama, Mary Esther Waters, married my daddy, Earl B. Anderson, October 11, 1948. Now, my name in Trinity Roosevelt High School is Ernestine Anderson because I was married to Willie Lewis Chaffee before I was married to Kenneth Earl French, February 26, 1971. Got a divorce. Kept Ernestine Branch till I got married to Willie Lewis Charles Morris V, 1989. Got a divorce from him. It don't say contrary, does it? Who has cheated on me? Well, let me hear. God told me to get a divorce from him, so he told me to get my name changed back to the name I was born, Ernestine Anderson. Now, March the 5th, 1999, that's when my mama died. Her name was Mary Esther Anderson. My daddy, Earl B. Anderson, died July 18, 1998.
as I moved into the house, summer 915, tax week in December 1990, and my name was Ernestine Childs because I was married to Willie Lewis Childs. That house was transferred to my name because it was in my dad's name at the beginning. He said, come on, Ernestine, I called my dad's husband, Lewis, because that was his middle name. Come on, Ernestine, we're going to transfer the house to your name. That's the reason why. Because what I went through with my last husband, I thought I lost the house. Because I met this man on the Red Line train to go down there and find out who's paying the taxes on the house. And I went down there and found out who was paying the taxes on the house. But in the meantime, of this past year, in July, because I lost my driver's license to secure the court, went for one information, found another information. Found out 821 East 10th Street was signed over to my name in 1991. Okay, this is my house. So it's 7916 K Street. Appreciate it very much. I would like to have him back.
Thank you. Secretary?
Thank you. Your next speaker is Judy Robertson, followed by Tamara Washington. Judy Robertson. If not present, Tamara Washington.
Hello, Council. My name is Tamara Washington. I live at 2814 Painted Trail.
Talk to the microphone, please.
Oh, my name is Tamara Washington. I live at 2814 Painted Trail, Dallas, Texas, 75237. And today I want to talk about tying homelessness prevention with health care, and that's within Dallas. And basically, there's a term out there called chronic homelessness. And there are people that don't qualify for health care. I'm just going to give you a quick example. Let's say there's a person and they're homeless. Well, they get homeless health care. And then they find a job, so they're no longer eligible for homeless health care. However, their job can't provide insurance for them. Then, let's say, they can't upkeep their health, and so they have to miss some time at work. And businesses are businesses, and so they have to let that person go. And that person could possibly go back into homelessness. And so that's one thing I like to talk about. The thing I like to talk about is that African American men, it's said in that they don't basically, a lot of them, they have a high rate of unemployment. So to me, that would seem that a lot of African American men, black males, would not have health care insurance. And another topic I like to talk about is businesses that contribute to, that contribute to pollution. Let me just say, there are businesses that may contribute to pollution. And just like as a citizen, each year you have to have your car get a sticker for pollution control. You have that done. You meet the requirements. Businesses should also that possibly pollute should also have that restriction too. If they don't meet certain requirements, then I believe they should contribute to healthcare fund, and that's within, I'm talking about with businesses within Texas. And then as far as my situation, I've told you about the legal foreclosure on my home. I've received a letter with a place for my husband's signature to go, and it was sent in his name to Everhome Mortgage Company, and he never signed it. So that was done by a government agency in Fort Worth that sent us a copy of this letter. I don't know how it, he never signed it. It's a complaint form sent to Everhome Mortgage Company. And basically, I know Everhome, they've hired a big international law firm to represent them, but I hope they don't, like the gentleman, like one of the previous speakers said before, he said, let me start over, basically, I hope there's a 48%. The reading in Texas is in the 48th percentile. I hope every home mortgage company in Florida doesn't believe that there's a vacuum in the ears of people of Texas. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Rhonda Chu, followed by Jewel Floyd. Rhonda Chu is not present. Jewel Floyd is not present. Next speaker, Deborah Gibson, followed by Shirley King. Deborah Gibson, not present. Shirley King.
Good morning, Honorable Mayor Pepperd and Associate Council Members. I am Shirley King. I reside at 500 Quick Civil Drive, DeSoto, Texas, but I work in Pleasant Grove, and I'm representing the Pleasant Grove Weed and Seed and the Pleasant Grove Mission Possible. I know this morning you had an opportunity to honor one of the persons who's been working with us in Pleasant Grove for the past 2 years. We are here to ask your assistance on a project. I believe you should have before you a handout with petitions. We secured 300 names of residents in Pleasant Grove to support our request to the city to donate or lease the Bucknell Library to Pleasant Grove Mission Possible Weed and Seed. Under the Department of Justice initiative, Weed and Seed program initiatives are expected to become self-sufficient after their fifth year of operation. We are in our fourth year. We cover an area in Pleasant Grove that represents 37,000 residents, and we've seen a reduction in crime since we've been operating the last 3.5 years. We understand that the library, the new library, which is scheduled to go up at Holcomb, might be completed in June or at midsummer. We are asking that that property be donated, again, or leased to the Pleasant Grove Weed and Seed Mission Possible. The mandate is for us to not only be self-sustaining, but to provide what they call a safe haven. It's a multi-purpose center where we would provide work with the Dallas Police Department, the prosecutor, and the code enforcement representative who already work with us in Pleasant Grove, but we have no physical location identified by the residents in the community. So our request to you is to assist us in demonstrating to the Department of Justice that this community supports the work of Pleasant Grove Weed and Seed by donating that space to us, or leasing the space to us, so we can provide a one-stop, multi-purpose operation, including Weed and Seed, the department, the Dallas Police Department representative, who is our liaison, the City of Dallas prosecutor for Pleasant Grove, as well as the code enforcement officer. So we thank you for the consideration, and we certainly hope that you will see the importance of our being able to sustain the work that we've begun in Pleasant Grove. Thank you very much.
Your next speaker is Ozumba Lunk. Not present. Next speaker, Leslie Allen Davis.
Hello, everybody. My name is Leslie Allen Davis. Welcome to a new year. God bless you. Y'all call me, I'll go out again this time. I don't have that much to say, but I'm going to say what I can in 2 minutes and 51 seconds, 50 seconds. Okay, let's see. On President Obama, Barack Obama, I didn't vote for him because I thought he couldn't have a job. He's doing a fantastic job, but he let me down on abortion. You know, right now, as we speak, he's talking about paying for all abortions in the United States. I already talked about this draft for money. Maybe those people that be more responsible for what they're doing and take care of their child and raise their child, because when you have abortion, it does come to the human mind. And it affects both the male and the female. I don't know how it affects the male, but they do something. They be getting sick when women getting pregnant. I don't know how they do it, but they do. And I think we should, I think Dallas is standing in the trenches for the people that want to keep their babies and make those people pay for their abortion. And see what else I want to say. I got 2 whole minutes. I think we should help support the Jewish or Israeli people, because right now, as we speak, in the last 2 years, 3 years, they've been trying to say that the Holocaust didn't happen, and over, and they have slaughterhouses, I think Dachau or wherever it is, where it's in Germany, around Switzerland and so on, in that vicinity, where people have been slaughtered and said don't exist no more. That's just like slavery. Right now, the county is trying to put a water fountain in the record building. When you get drink water, they show pictures of how blacks were treated in the past. See, what they're trying to do is erase our history, the real history of America and the world, and change so you don't know what to believe. So I think we should try to see what we can get that water fountain, put it even in the library, in the city, downtown library, where we can show how blacks have been mistreated. So we can always keep in our mind that we don't want to repeat, don't want history to repeat itself. And see what it is. I got 1 minute and 12 seconds. Let me see.
What?
Let's see. I'm sorry to hear that Chief Kunkel stepped down, but this is for the best. We need somebody that's going to do the right thing. I think he's doing a good job, but I need somebody. I think somebody, we need to hold the ball to somebody even higher. And let's see. What else? We still got our gambling machines all over Oak Cliff where they be gambling on and late at night. Police already know it, but that's just the way it goes in America. I'm getting 3 minutes this time. I still put this
appreciate
it. Why don't you put 35 seconds? I got the hell
out of
it.
What's
your job? Under the Constitution, do I get 33 minutes or not? Yes or no? It's a yes or no. Okay, I got 30 seconds. I'm going for you sometime.
Don't have something to say, you're done.
I don't. Okay, I'm fine.
I appreciate it. Thanks for being with us, Leslie.
Your final speaker this afternoon is Gwayne Wooten. Ms. Wooten is not present. That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. All right, here's our issue. We've got an executive session I'm going to call in just a moment. We are fortunate to have the Greater Dallas Restaurant Association and Ruth Chris that is going to supply a lunch to us today. They are there. They'll be waiting at noon. So we need to get through the executive session in an expeditious fashion. With that said, it is now 11:23 on January 6th of 2010. City Council will now go into closed session. Under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, to receive advice from and consult with City Attorney on the following matters. Urott versus Dallas, Conceros and Sacito versus Dallas, the claim of State Farm Insurance, Reeves versus Dallas, Dallas versus Byrne et al., including Half Associates, Steel Roofing, Redland Insurance Company, J&J Roofing, J&J Roofing and Sheet Metal, Travelers Casualty, Dallas versus Stewart, Dallas versus VSC, LLC, legal issues involving city auditors, audit of revenues from emergency ambulance fees and the audit plan for fiscal year 2009, and White versus Dallas. What we'll do is we'll go ahead and break now. I think we'll just stay in this room, go through it. I know there's one video that they've already got set up. So if we could go ahead and clear the room, we'll go into our executive session.